This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you're based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, Shavua Tov. How are you?
Boker Tov, Shavua Tov. I hope that everybody's managing now that we're into the 3 weeks. Of course, this is a very auspicious period as we lead up to the marking of Tisha B'Av, which is the ninth day of Av, the day in which the temples were both destroyed, and this three-week period that precedes the ninth of Av is one which has quite a lot of significance. But before we talk about other things, I want to just continue Louis, because a little known fact is that there was an Israeli winner at Wimbledon, and he is Guy Sasson, who competed in the quad wheelchair doubles.
Louis told us, Wimbledon. Amazing, absolutely incredible.
And interestingly, that guy was partnered with Niels Fink, and he defeated in the final South African Donald Rampadi, who partnered Gregory Slade. So, yeah, Guy is an interesting character. He was injured in a skiing accident, actually, which is why he is now disabled. Great for Israel to also share in some of the accolades at Wimbledon. This week in the snippets, I'd like to devote time to talking about little things that are coming about out about the 12-day war. And there's so many little bits and pieces that were not known before. Some might even fall into the category of Iran, check your mezuzahs, because some of the stories are quite quite unbelievable and really require a lot of creativity in order to work out exactly how this all came together. But I'd like to start with the fact that the 12-day war was started on Friday, June the 13th, in the early hours of the morning of Friday, June the 13th. And there is a question as to why that day was chosen. What is significant about that? Was it coincidental, or was there some significance? And inevitably, we have come across a reason why that day was particularly chosen. And it might be not quite well known that Saturday, June the 14th, was a national holiday in Iran, Eid Egadir, which is a Shia festival that marks the that celebrates the appointment of Ali ibn Abi Talib as Muhammad's successor. And the Eid Gadir is named like that because Gadir is a pond, and we understand that the Prophet Muhammad is believed to have made this announcement at the Gadir of Qum, the pond of Qum. And that's why the Shia celebrate this particular festival, which is only a week after a much more significant and widespread festival across all of the Muslim population, which of course was the Eid Qurban, the Feast of the Sacrifice. That was much more well known. But Eid Egadir was celebrated on June the 14th, which of course was the day immediately after the war broke out. And we understand that the Mossad had figured that many of the key targets in the senior ranks of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps, and indeed other government officials who were on the hit list for that first wave of attacks that took place in the 12-day war, many of those individuals were expected to be found at home to celebrate that weekend festival. And that's exactly how it turned out to be. They were all found in a relatively predictable place, a place that had been set up clearly to be attacked, and they knew that people were going to be there. And we understand that that is the reason why that day was chosen to start the war.
Hmm. Absolutely fascinating. And as you say, I think we're going to be learning more and more about really what happened during this war as time passes. The Prime Minister returned from the US at the end of last week. He did so without any news on a ceasefire or hostage release deal. Do we know what the sticking points are?
Well, we've heard from President Trump that it plans this week to clear out the last sticking points of this ceasefire agreement and hostage release that he had put so much effort and he'd really made some quite public announcements. He'd really put his neck on the line in some senses, raising expectations that some sort of a deal would be done. And he said this week that he hopes that he's hopeful that a Gaza ceasefire can be straightened out, in the words that he's chosen to use. But the sticking points seem to be pretty fundamental. And it's a mystery to me as to how we're going to get over these, because the Prime Minister keeps saying that he will ensure with the ceasefire that if the war is ended, that Hamas is no longer in power. That is the statement that he has made, that he continues to make, that he was making last week in the US as well, that one of the conditions of the war ending is that Hamas are no longer in power. And Hamas that's the only item, the only element that Hamas really want to get out of any ceasefire agreement. The only reason, in fact, that Hamas would have to release the hostages is to allow themselves to stay in power in Gaza. They have really very little else to lose. There's very little more that we can threaten Hamas with, given the fact that we've been at war in Gaza for almost 2 years now, and we've succeeded in destroying so much of their infrastructure, and we've succeeded in taking out many of their senior leaders. We've really done a lot of damage to the Hamas infrastructure, and yet somehow they've managed to cling on to power. And they understand that the day after in Gaza, we'll need to have somebody to control Gaza, because Israel has no interest to take over control or rulership of Gaza. It may be true that Israel will hang on to certain bits of Gaza from a strategically security point of view, but not from the concept of wanting to rule over Gaza or to take control over Gaza. I don't think that Israel has any intention of doing that, and I don't think that that's been stated anywhere. So what is it that Hamas would wish to get from any ceasefire agreement? And I think that there can only really be one answer: to hang on to power in Gaza. And yet, that is exactly what the Prime Minister is saying he will ensure doesn't happen at the end of the war. So Hamas are looking for a statement which says the war will come to an end finally. And within that context, Hamas wish to ensure, even if it might not be publicly said, that they remain in power. And that is exactly the counterpoint that the Prime Minister has been making. So I don't really know where this deal is.
Doesn't that mean, when it comes down to it, that in fact a ceasefire isn't actually appropriate at this time? Hamas haven't accepted their defeat.
Well, and the question is whether Hamas will ever accept their defeat, because they have it in their interests to somehow prolong this war. They're not losing anything by this war continuing. I mean, it's true to say that a number of their leaders have been taken out, have been killed, even within the last week or so, that some of the senior leaders, local leaders around Gaza have been killed. And so they are still losing personnel, and they are still losing people, and they are still losing infrastructure, and they are still losing to some degree some control. And we've seen the battles go on in the food distribution arena, which is really a main point of control for Hamas. But as far as Hamas are concerned, their interest is to try and prolong this war, to lengthen it as much as possible. They don't care too much about the state of our hostages and the fact that each day means that they're less and less likely to survive and more likely to be injured and damaged and the prospect of them coming home becomes less and less. For them, that's not an issue. They just want to try and hang on as much as possible. Of course, Israel now wants to bring this war to an end sooner rather than later. And so Hamas are clearly stringing things out, and we see this being played out in every possible context. And I don't think that they've got a great deal to lose by continuing to pull things out. I know that there are many Israelis who feel that Prime Minister Netanyahu is trying to lengthen the war in order to try and prolong his stay in office, because there are many who feel that as soon as this war is over, Israel will likely go to an election, and that there is at least a chance that the Prime Minister may be voted out of office in that election. And so therefore the conclusion to that is the Prime Minister is trying to hang on to power, and therefore he's trying to prolong the war. I'm not sure that I entirely agree with that particular sentiment and that theory, but I'm certainly sure that Hamas are trying to drag this war out. And we can see it. We can see that, you know, almost an agreement was reached, even at the levels of the White House, even at the level of the Prime Minister traveling to Washington, which clearly was billed as being a potential announcement of a ceasefire and a hostage release. He came back theoretically empty-handed, because I think that we'd all expected that he was going to come home with something. Nothing transpired. And in the meantime, in Gaza, the war continues, in spite of the fact that the IDF has announced that their military targets have effectively been achieved. And yet, one of the interesting things that's been happening in Gaza in recent days and weeks is this new concept of what they call tent hunting. Tent hunting is a new thing that's happening in Gaza. And tent hunting is something that happens within the humanitarian areas, where Israeli drones are seen to be flying around these designated humanitarian areas and going around each of the tents looking for Hamas operatives who are hiding themselves in these humanitarian zones and in these tents amongst the civilians. And Israeli drones are going after them and picking them out and killing them even within the humanitarian zones. And that's what they refer to as tent hunting. And of course, the international press will go and say, well, Israel's attacking humanitarian zones. And that's quite true. Israel is attacking humanitarian zones. But the question is why? And it's not because Israel is going after the civilians who live there. Israel is tracking down terrorists who are hiding themselves in amongst the civilian population, as they have done for all this war and even before that. So the current status for me is very, very unsure. And I'm not quite sure what basis the president has to say we're going to sort out the last few sticking points, because for me, there seems to be a fundamental disconnect, a fundamental lack of ability to come to an agreement. And so I don't know what it is that they're trying to convince Hamas of to allow them to release our hostages. But that would definitely be a fascinating discussion for me to listen to, because as far as I can tell, they just have no interest to do so.
And what's also interesting that nobody seems to put together is, if there is a so-called genocide, well, the easiest way to stop it is for Hamas to release the hostages and surrender. But if Hamas is being so difficult with regard to this negotiation, well, what kind of genocide is it really? The contradictions are just absurd.
I think the whole discussion of the genocide is something that, you know, we've all come to terms with, that you can't convince people who are screaming genocide to believe that there isn't genocide, even though all the facts are there to prove that. And by the way, just to address a recent event, there was an incident in Gaza where the IDF have acknowledged that a missile suffered some sort of a technical malfunction and did land indeed in an area where civilians were being distributed water. And the IDF has apologized for that. There were apparently people killed in that particular incident. And the IDF has come out to say, we put our hands up and say there was a technical issue. We had no intention of doing that. It was a mistake and we apologize for that. Of course, Sky News splashed all over the front page, you know, words which didn't quite use genocide, but which were very close to that. And there is, as you've said, Howard, no evidence of genocide. And even though we do have these incidents, which are very, very unfortunate and which we acknowledge should never take place, there is no evidence to support that that is part of a serial campaign. There's no evidence to support that that's part of a strategy or part of a policy which is being followed. So, you know, the believers will believe the non-believers, of course, will never believe.
Yeah. We don't have a lot of time, but the IDF rescued collaborators from Gaza yesterday. What's known about this?
So I think that this is a very fascinating story because, you know, when we think about the Palestinians, we think about a sort of a single group of people. But in fact, the truth of the matter is that the Palestinians are made up of different tribes. And it's interesting that the IDF have been using some of the Palestinian tribes who are not supporters of Hamas, who do not associate themselves with Hamas, as collaborators to try and help the IDF to get information from Gaza. And there was an incident yesterday in the Gaza Strip when those collaborators, one of those tribes which don't associate themselves with Hamas, were involved in an incident which actually injured quite seriously some of those people. And the IDF sent in the search and rescue 669 unit and doctors from the IDF in order to rescue those individuals. A helicopter was sent in order to bring the people who had been injured to Israeli hospitals to give them medical care. So there is a lot of information that is being derived from these tribes who are non-supporters of Hamas in Gaza, and of course at great danger to themselves, not only physical danger as we've seen where Israel had to get involved in rescuing them physically, but of course who knows what status they will have in the post-war Gaza once Hamas understands who was helping the IDF to get information about what's going on in Gaza.
Anthony Reich, thank you as always. It is 8:01. I'm Howard Feldman. You can catch the Israel Report with Anthony Reich tomorrow morning at 7:45.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.